about that briefly?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, there's more and more of a just a very direct and explicit marriage that we're seeing between the Trump administration and tech oligarchs. I mean, we saw it at the inauguration. We're seeing it in these in this initial week and weeks of campaign promises. So it's really no surprise that big tech is kind of colliding with the state because it's all about the concentration of power. But I want to remind everybody that even back in the Obama era, Google was the biggest lobbyist during the Obama administration. So we need to be vigilant and ensure that AI systems and technologies of all kinds support laborers, citizens, and people around the planet. And that's what's woefully missing in most discussions of DeepSeek, OpenAI, and big tech in general.
And finally, in 10 seconds, how does this relate to TikTok, if it does in any way, with the decision coming down and whether it'll be banned?
Very important question. These are all data grabs, right? So part of Musk's ownership of Twitter/X is the data that can be grabbed to form his own AI initiatives, which are trying to compete with OpenAI. It's going to be a very similar issue when it comes to TikTok. The acquisition of TikTok is an acquisition of a largesse of data, at least American data. America has the largest number of TikTok users in the world. So that data can all be mined to reconstruct these types of chatbots, which again are the brains of different types of
We have to leave it
consumer-facing
there,
AI systems.
Professor Srinivasan of UCLA. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
What does the average KBOO listener think of self-help radio?
This is so hard and complicated.
I have no idea what it is.
What is this old-time music?
I feel
It seems kind of worthless.
Why does it have to make so much noise?
It sounds very hipster.
That's the worst thing.
Look at how humanity has used their intellect.
Self-Help Radio, a different theme explored with music and talk every week. Tuesdays, midnight to 3 a.m. on KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a stumbling Robert Kennedy is repeatedly attacked at his first Senate confirmation hearing.
A federal ban on grants and assistance since lifted amid widespread confusion about its implementation.
And in international news, a stampede today at the world's largest religious gathering kills dozens.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 29th, 2025. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Josh Salem. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., President Trump's nominee for Health and Human Services Secretary, struggled mightily for more than 3 hours today during his first confirmation hearing. Trump wants Kennedy to lead a $1.7 trillion agency that oversees vaccine recommendations, as well as food inspections, hospital oversight, and funding for hundreds of community health clinics. Kennedy displayed limited knowledge of critical health programs he would be in charge of. He tried to reject accusations that he is anti-vaccine, despite the fact he has publicly questioned their safety for years. Kennedy told senators that he had been mistakenly labeled anti-vaccine in news reports. He was then interrupted by a protester in the audience who shouted, quote, "He lies." Kennedy's appearance before the Senate Finance Committee, his first of two hearings, quickly led to a series of angry and argumentative exchanges with Democrats on the panel. Senator Michael Bennet, a Democrat from Colorado, said, quote, "Out of 330 million Americans, we're being asked to put somebody in this job who has spent 50 years of his life spreading half-truths, peddling in false statements, peddling in theories that, you know, create doubt about whether or not things that we know are safe are unsafe," end quote. Bennet read a series of Kennedy's past statements back to him, including his claim that COVID-19 was engineered to target black and white people, but spare Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese persons.
Many of the Republicans on the panel praised RFK as a rebellious truth-teller, supporting his crusade to improve child health as part of a movement known as Make America Healthy Again. Kennedy repeatedly tried to steer the hearing to less controversial arguments about improving the quality of the nation's food supply and decreasing the prevalence of chronic health conditions, ideas that have drawn some expert and bipartisan support. Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat from Massachusetts, accused Kennedy of profiteering from vaccine skepticism, pointing to a financial stake he has in litigation against the vaccine maker Merck. She said, quote, "Kids might die, but Robert Kennedy can keep cashing in." Kennedy also stumbled over basic facts regarding Medicare and Medicaid, which cover over 100 million older and low-income Americans. At one point, he described Medicaid's premiums and deductibles as being too high when, except in very rare cases, the program's enrollees do not pay either of those types of fees. Kennedy also opposes fluoridated water and embraces raw milk, even though federal regulators say raw milk is dangerous. Kennedy is scheduled to appear before the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee tomorrow.
Beaverton teachers won't strike if a new agreement is approved. Today, the school district announced a tentative 3-year agreement with the Beaverton Education Association, the union that represents teachers in the district. Teachers and the school district have been bargaining for a new contract for nearly a year. The deal includes cost of living raises and new health insurance contributions. Union members need to ratify the agreement, and the school board has to approve and finalize the contract. If approved, teachers will receive a 14.75% cost of living adjustment over the next 3 years. The union previously advocated for a 16% salary increase over 2 years. Other concerns were staffing shortages and safe, inclusive classrooms. The district's employer health insurance contributions will also increase.
Democrats say Trump orders put Americans at risk. Republicans weigh in on voter ID, and there's more criticism of tax credits for private schooling. With these stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This illegal move is a massive overreach by the Trump administration. The American people did not vote for this kind of senseless chaos.
Democratic Washington Senator Patty Murray says President Donald Trump's sweeping order freezing all federal aid threatens lives and public safety. She says police, schools, rural hospitals, and veterans rely on loans and grants. Senate Democrats say the order is unconstitutional, and a federal judge has blocked the spending pause until next week. The White House says Medicaid payments aren't frozen, but state agencies, which serve roughly 80 million people through Medicaid or children's health insurance, report being blocked from the federal payment system. New Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt says payments to individuals through Medicare, Social Security, and food stamps won't be affected. She says the temporary pause is meant to align spending with Trump's priorities, including ending clean power and diversity projects.
It means no more funding for the Green New Scam that has cost American taxpayers tens of billions of dollars. It means no more funding for transgenderism and wokeness across our federal bureaucracy and agencies.
In her first press briefing, Leavitt also said the White House would no longer focus on so-called legacy media, but would allow greater access to bloggers and social media. Meanwhile, the spending freeze could stall disaster relief for California, which Trump says should stop until the state puts in voter ID. Noah Garcia with the Dolores Huerta Foundation tells KGET News many Californians wouldn't have access to required documents, including their birth certificate.
And these voters who are disenfranchised are often, you know, Black, Latino, Indian American, rural communities and low-income communities.
It's highly unusual to bring a separate topic into this kind of policy fight, but House Speaker Mike Johnson says conditioning wildfire aid on voter ID means tax dollars won't underwrite what he calls California's leftist policies. More than a dozen states are considering bills to boost private school voucher programs. Congressional Republicans say they plan to support private schools by adding tax credits for anyone who donates to private school scholarships. But Zach Sheehan with the New Hampshire School Funding Fairness Project says vouchers generally drain funds for public schools.
People deeply value their public schools. They're often centers of community. They mean a lot, especially to our rural communities, but to all of our communities in New Hampshire.
And the Supreme Court is declining to hear two voting cases. Montana's Secretary of State sought to revive two bills struck down by state courts limiting the types of acceptable voter ID. And Pennsylvania voting rights groups aimed to challenge the state's rejection of some mail-in ballots. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Housing in Oregon is too expensive, and it's hard to come by. That's according to a new study by consulting firm Eco Northwest, which was presented to state House and Senate housing committees last week. It confirms what most Oregonians know. There's not enough housing, and what exists is too expensive. Half of all renters in Portland are rent burdened, spending more than 30% of their gross income on that rent. But it's not just Portland. The numbers are even higher elsewhere in the state. Over half of renters in Eugene, Salem, Medford, and Gresham are rent burdened. As for the housing supply, 5 in 100 homes statewide in Oregon are vacant, a rate 36% lower than the national average, and lower than in every state but Connecticut. Multnomah County's vacancy is the same as the state average, but 9 counties come in lower, including Clackamas, Marion, Deschutes, and Lane. Washington County has the lowest vacancy rate. Eco Northwest specialist Mike Wilkerson said, quote, "This moment calls for creativity, and that means allowing housing where we have not allowed it before," end quote.
Potato chip lovers in Oregon and Washington with milk allergies may need to discard their bags of Lay's Classic potato chips. The Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, elevated a recall this week. Parent company Frito-Lay first declared the recall in mid-December, and the FDA elevated the recall to Class 1 in the region this week. Class 1 is the FDA's most severe recall notice. The large-size 13-ounce bags of potato chips contain milk, an ingredient not listed on the package. Many food allergies are mild, but severe allergic reactions to milk can be life-threatening. The FDA says bags sold in Oregon and Washington face high risk, and more than 6,000 bags in Oregon and Washington are affected. The bags have the UPC codes 28400 or 31041. They could have been bought as early as November. They feature a guaranteed fresh date of February 11, 2025, and specific manufacturing codes. Customers can find them on the FDA's Recalls, Market Withdrawals, and Safety Alerts website. No other Lay's products are affected.
Child care in Washington State can cost more than college. New legislation proposes offering businesses a tax credit when they cover it for their employees. Isabel Charlet tells us more.
New legislation in Olympia aims to ease the burden of childcare costs for Washington families by allowing businesses to help their employees pay for it. Under House Bill 1564, businesses could reduce the amount they spend on business and occupation taxes by the amount they pay for childcare assistance to workers. Republican Representative Joshua Penner of Ording, who authored the bill, says prices for childcare in the state can exceed the cost of college tuition.
That's just a really tough position that we put our workers in, that they have to decide whether or not to be underemployed or forego opportunities in order to get good childcare.
Nearly 40% of Washington parents have reported quitting a job or being fired due to childcare challenges, costing families almost $7 billion annually in lost income. The bill was just introduced and is in the House Finance Committee. Penner adds if a business didn't use the full tax benefit in 1 year, the bill would allow it to apply the remaining amount to the following year. He says he isn't worried about the potential loss of tax revenue for Washington State.
I think nothing is more efficient than those B&O taxes being directly applied to childcare for the workers within that business.
Washington ranks 7th, just behind Oregon, for the least affordable infant care in the country, with an average year of full-time care topping $20,000. Penner says many factors, including low pay for providers and the high cost of running a childcare business, have driven up price tags for families. He adds the bill has bipartisan support. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
The White House is walking back a federal spending freeze memo that raised major alarm bells with states and nonprofits. Two lawsuits were filed against the memo, including one from Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield. The memo potentially implicated a wide slate of state programs, including Medicaid, SNAP, law enforcement, housing assistance, and education. While that memo has been walked back for now, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt did say that Trump's executive orders freezing foreign assistance and ending diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives remain in effect. The pause on federal grants and loans caused tremendous confusion and anxiety nationwide, even though the White House claimed it was not as sweeping an order as it appeared. The memo was not specific about what programs could be impacted, and it wasn't clear pausing funds was within Trump's power. The administration received a veritable flood of calls from legislators and state officials with questions about its effect on their home states. Republicans were apparently privately frustrated. They were not given a heads up regarding a decision that stirred so much outrage from constituents. The original demand was that federal agencies temporarily pause all activities related to obligation or disbursement of all federal financial assistance. Some of the deepest confusion concerned Medicaid. During her first White House press briefing, Trump's press secretary could not answer a question on whether Medicaid funding was included in the freeze.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for a KABU News In-Depth interview with writer Gemma Whalen on her novel Painting Through the Dark. At 6, it's Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear, with an overnight low of 28. Tomorrow, we will have periods of rain with a high of 43. Today in history, Carl Benz patented the first successful gasoline-powered automobile. The quote of the day is from author Edgar Allan Poe, who published his first story, The Raven, under that name, on this day in 1845. Poe said, "If you wish to forget anything on the spot, make a note that this thing is to be remembered." As a bonus quote, Poe separately stated, "I wish I could write as mysterious as a cat."
At least 30 people were killed in a stampede at the world's largest religious gathering earlier today. Another 60 who were injured were taken to the hospital. Millions of pilgrims come to attend the Maha Kumbh Mela festival in northern India. They gather to ritually bathe in the Sangam, a confluence of holy waters. Today was a sacred day in the six-week Hindu festival, with a record 100 million devotees expected to attend. Participants believe a dip at the holy site can cleanse them of past sins and end the process of reincarnation. The stampede occurred when pilgrims tried to jump barricades erected for a procession of holy men. Indian authorities took more than 16 hours to release casualty figures. Prime Minister Narendra Modi called the incident extremely sad and extended his condolences. One pilgrim said, quote, "Suddenly there was pushing in the crowd and we got trapped. A lot of us fell down and the crowd went uncontrolled. There was no chance for escape. There was pushing from all sides." Distressed families lined up outside a makeshift hospital nearby, hoping for news of missing loved ones. Clothes, blankets, and backpacks were littered around the site of the stampede. Millions continued to throng the 15-square-mile pilgrimage site, even though police asked them to stay away. Attendees were urged to take baths at other riverbanks instead. The Maha Kumbh Festival is held every 12 years and started on January 13th. Nearly 150 million people have already attended. About 50,000 security personnel were stationed nearby to manage crowds, and more than 2,500 cameras were set up so officials can try to prevent such tragedies. Opposition leaders criticized the federal and the state government, blaming the stampede on mismanagement and VIP culture, which allegedly is code for potentially preferential treatment for politicians and celebrities. The Hindu population makes up nearly 80% of India's more than 1.4 billion people. The ruling party has previously bragged about its promotion of Hindu cultural symbols. The Maha Kumbh Festival and other similar events have had fatal stampedes in the past. In July, at least 116 people died, most of them women and children, in a stampede in northern India.
Consumers like to believe animals supplying their meat are humanely raised. But welfare advocates say USDA guidelines are not sufficient. Now, there's fighting over when the humanely raised label can be put on food packaging. Alex Gonzalez has more on the story.
Consumers in Nevada and around the country value animal welfare when shopping for meat at the grocery store. Researchers say branding meat products with special labels can be enough to convince buyers to purchase one item over another. But Zach Strong with the Animal Welfare Institute says the U.S. Department of Agriculture doesn't have the legal authority to send inspectors to farms to ensure practices are conducive to humanely raising animals. He adds the department's Food Safety and Inspections Service instead reviews documentation sent from meat processors themselves that explains what practices were used.
So fill out this form, attach this information, and then the agency folks review and approve these requests based on the documentation that they receive. Authority is limited to inspecting slaughtering and processing facilities.
Strong says FSIS recognizes that's a problem and adds that in their most recent guidelines, FSIS uses stronger language to encourage producers to use third-party certifiers to substantiate claims. While Strong calls the guidelines a step in the right direction, he says they're still not enough to combat misleading labels for meat and poultry products. Strong says FSIS guidelines require that a company explain what it means by humanely raised. But he says because these special labels are dependent on how a company defines them, certain products could in fact be animal welfare approved, while others could be manipulating the system and simply be used as a marketing tactic.
The only thing that the guidelines require is that the company include how it chooses to define humanely raised, either on the package itself or links to where a consumer can find that definition on the company's website.
Animal Welfare Institute requested application files for 97 claims sent by producers to the USDA in 2023 and found that 85% of them lack sufficient substantiation. AWI has found a majority of consumers believe producers shouldn't be allowed to set their own definitions relating to claims about how farm animals are raised and feel farms should be more intensely inspected. For Nevada News Service, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
Tribes across the country were trying to figure out what a wholesale pause in federal assistance could have meant for them. This comes in a setting where maintaining sovereignty is still paramount. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribes across the country are assessing what a pause on federal loans, grants, and other financial assistance programs means for their communities. This comes after the Trump administration issued a memorandum this week from the Office of Management and Budget. The pause was to become effective on Tuesday at 5 p.m., but a federal judge blocked it until a hearing on Monday. Tribes in Alaska, Idaho, South Dakota, Oklahoma, Michigan, North Dakota, Nebraska, and many more states assured their communities in letters and statements that their leaders are aware of the memo and are working with their internal departments and federal partners to understand the impacts. Tribal leaders say they're committed to protecting tribal sovereignty and to holding the federal government accountable for treaty and trust responsibilities. The Fort Hall Business Council in Idaho said in a statement it will continue to aggressively monitor the new administration's actions and inform the community on issues of concern. In a statement, the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska said the funding freeze sent shockwaves throughout their community and Indian country, creating mass confusion. The tribe says its council is engaging with allies in Congress to push back against any potential disruptions to tribal programs. Tribal allies in Congress include New Mexico's delegation. The all-Democratic delegation held a press conference Tuesday and says concerns were raised from tribes across the state. Representative Teresa Legere Fernandez says Taos Pueblo was having issues using federal portals to conduct tribal business. Representative Gabe Vasquez says he was at a morning meeting on Zuni Pueblo with the Zuni Youth Enrichment Project, which receives federal dollars to serve thousands of children in Zuni. He says funds essentially vanished overnight due to the freeze because the program could not access its system to pay invoices or pay employees.
We're not talking here about entitlement projects to Americans that don't deserve to be funded. We're talking about the health and welfare of children in this state and the things that will help them grow up to lead healthy lives.
The delegation says it also heard from the Mescalero Apache tribe about concerns about public safety. Vasquez says this action was a misfire by the president.
And I think the American people truly see that this administration is not organized in its approach to changing policy, that there needs to be public dialogue and discussion with folks in our districts, our communities, across the country about what is best for the people of this district, this state, and this nation.
Representative Melanie Stansberry and Senators Martin Heinrich and Ben Ray Lujan also addressed concerns. The New Mexico congressional delegation says it will fight against the funding freeze and work to protect vital services. The White House defended the action during a press conference Tuesday, saying the funding pause will not impact individuals and it's temporary. The Chickasaw Nation in Oklahoma has signed a memorandum of understanding with Pontotoc County District Attorney Eric Johnson. Chickasaw Nation Governor Bill Anitubby says the agreement is a proactive step to protect the safety and security of the community. He adds the memorandum establishes an important partnership to enhance communication among county, tribal, and federal law enforcement. He says it's another step in the Chickasaw Nation's commitment to work together to provide public safety in their communities. Johnson says communication between his office and the tribe's prosecutors has always been good, but the MOU will help to facilitate better communication and coordination. Johnson's office works with the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Oklahoma's office, which is responsible for prosecution of felony and misdemeanor crimes. The MOU seeks better communication among these prosecuting offices where jurisdiction may sometimes overlap. The Chickasaw Nation and the DA's office have hosted DA trainings together. According to the tribe, it currently has more than 80 cross-deputation agreements with other criminal justice agencies. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
How do we solve the problem of sustainable and effective renewable energy storage? Dr. Anthony Leizowitz has some ideas on Climate Connection.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As power companies add more solar and wind to the grid, they need ways to store extra energy when it's abundant. This stored energy can then be used when needed.
To deal with issues like, well, what if the wind doesn't blow for 3 days, or it's really cloudy for a long period of time, and so on.
Stuart Cohen of the National Renewable Energy Laboratory says batteries are one option. But another approach is pumped storage hydropower. Pumped hydro systems require two reservoirs of water, one higher in elevation than the other. When solar and wind energy are plentiful, that power can be used to pump water from the lower to the upper reservoir.
And then when you really need the electricity, you let the water fall downhill.
The rushing water then spins a turbine, which powers a generator to produce electricity. That part of the process is similar to how a hydroelectric power plant works. But instead of requiring a constant source of running water, pumped hydro systems use the same water over and over, so they do not need to be located on rivers. And Cohen says pumped hydro systems can store more energy and provide power for longer than most batteries, so they could help power companies use more clean energy. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael has ideas for balancing the federal budget.
The feds will soon run out of money, but not today. Got to figure out how to make us poor folks pay. Sales tax on SNAP purchases, Social Security paid out in Walmart and Amazon gift cards. Don't fire those deep state bureaucrats, Donnie. Transfer them to farms, restaurants, and meatpacking plants. Gonna be plenty of openings there. And return the draft. How you gonna start a new war if all the soldiers are on the border and make folks pay to not serve? Maybe take out a second mortgage on the White House to pay for Greenland? Sell naming rights to parks and monuments? Forget Mount McKinley, Mount Zuckerberg, the Bezos Canyon, the Gulf of Musk. Yeah, I'm gonna pay my taxes in April. Not that there'll be anybody left at the IRS to notice if I don't. And here in Oregon, Mayor Wilson needs the money for homeless shelters. Maybe Governor Kotek won't need to cut so many trees or turn so much farmland into solar arrays to power AI and the cloud. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 29th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call us or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and Anna Wilcox. The producer is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Alex Gonzalez, Kathleen Shannon, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. Gemma Whalen will be joining my co-anchor Ken Jones live to discuss Irish theater tours.